Hey, welcome in. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is the newest All Ball. It's part two of my discussion with Kyle Milling. Kyle Milling is a longtime friend of mine, played on my dad's AAU team when I was in middle and into high school. I was a backup. In the first episode, we talked about his personal basketball journey growing up, Poway, San Diego, ultimately going to UC Santa Barbara, then deciding he wasn't happy there, despite the fact that the campus, even Jerry Pym, is kind of like paradise, right? And he went to Oregon, had a great run at Oregon playing under Jerry Green. I told my own Jerry Green kind of recruiting story. Anyway, when we last left you, Kyle was discussing the end of his basketball journey as a player. Now he's a talented coach in Hiroshima in Japan. He's coached for years in France in both Pro B and in the Pro A. And, you know, again, among the discussions in episode one, if you missed it, you should download it, listen to it, rate it, review it. It's awesome. He talked about meeting his wife in France. He talked about playing in Toulon, buying a house in Toulon, and all the things that he did kind of to become, you know, a Frenchman, if you will. When you get done playing, you're kind of looking for what's next. And I think you'll be interested in the journey. So what I wanted to do is I wanted to make this a second part so that if you really enjoyed it, you got a chance to dig in on the really good stuff, the coaching stuff, because I have lots of coaches there. I've had friends that continue to reach out to me. Hey, man, when I'm recruiting, when I'm going into a gym, when I'm driving in the middle of nowhere, I like listening to guys talk about ball. And Kyle is just one of those guys. He's got two sons that play college basketball. You'll hear about them. One who just transferred, Kane, from Nevada to UC Davis. He's got another one in junior college. And this interview took place. He was in his apartment in Hiroshima, Japan. We talk sushi. We talk sushi rolls. We talk all the best eating in France and other places. I think you're really going to enjoy it. Here's part two of my discussion with Kyle Milling.
When did you decide, hey, I want to coach?
But after when I was done playing in Monaco, I had always wanted to go home. And I'd taken an online class. I'd got my degree, but I took an online class to become a teacher. So I went back to San Diego, got my teaching certificate, was teaching in high school and coaching in high school at Mount Carmel. And loved it. I was coaching AAU stuff for my sons and stuff. Loved it. But I wanted more, like a higher level as well. The higher level, I missed it. And I was there at home 2 years. Same time trying to get my wife's a nurse. So we're trying to get her nursing certificate. We had big problems with that, with the foreign nurses. The nursing board basically didn't want to qualify her to be a California nurse. And so anyways, at the same time, one of my best friends in France called me, asked me if I'd be interested in becoming an assistant coach in Toulon, the same team where I played forever. And basically didn't hesitate. And we packed up our bags again and went back across the waters.
You mentioned your boys. How long were they? So they were only in, how long were they in San Diego?
Fourth grade to sixth grade, and then third grade to fifth grade. Or
so. Okay. So you get back to France and now they're in that's the age. Once you get to like seventh, eighth, like now you want to really become a hooper, right? Mm-hmm. What's that like? What was their upbringing like in France? Like, were they on the Toulon junior team and you didn't coach them? Were they in the gym with you every night? They come to practice. Like, what was their upbringing?
It's all club in France. Everything's clubs. So they have clubs that aren't professional, but at the same time, there's no youth leagues and there's no, so they played for my team, the youth teams. So each team's basically 2 year level. So you have a 7, 8 year olds, 8, 9 year olds, 10, 11 year olds. And then once you get to high school, it's 3 years. So it's 15, 16, 17 year olds. So I know they played in the youth teams and you know, I never coached them. So they'd come to practice and hang out with us and hang out with the guys and stuff. But no, they'd practice between two to, as they get older, it's more and more times per week. But you know, their jerseys are the Toulon HTV is the team name, same club as the pro guys. So basically, the whole system is, you know, you're building up. You go from little kid. The whole goal is you go from the, they call it baby basket, the baby basketball, to to high school basketball to the basically college age, because there's no college teams there. And the 18 to 20 year old team, and the whole goal for those teams is try to get one or two players per year to make the pro team. Whatever.
How is the training? When they train, what do they do that's different from what we do?
Probably a lot of exercises, a lot of cones. They like put them cones out there. A lot of individual, you know, between the dribbling, between the passing, between the repetition of drills. There's a lot less playing 5-on-5 or stuff. There's a, you know, either reduced numbers, 3-on-3s, 4-on-4s, 2-on-2s, but a lot more skill work than probably in the States when they're younger, and a lot more practice because they only play once a week, and if that. So, you know, they're not playing twice a week, three times a week, or just games, you know, four games a day on the weekends or whatever. So it's basically a lot more skill work throughout the week than they do in the States. That's why so many guys are more fundamentally sound, you could say.
Yeah. So you arrive, you've been a high school coach, and now you're the assistant. When you were assistant, what did you focus on? Like, did the head coach break it down? Your defense? Like, were you just working with the guys, just working with the bigs? What'd you do?
Well, the typical French way for the assistant. Most teams have one assistant, especially in the lower teams. Bigger teams now have two or three assistants. So basically, it was me. I was the only assistant. He was my best friend, the head coach. I took the big guys for individual work. What's that?
What's his name?
Laurent Legnam. And he's still coaching now. He's one of the best coaches in France still. And anyways, I took the big guys doing individual work. I do a lot of the warm-ups, the first, you know, 15, 20 minutes. A theme, you know, be either offensive drills to warm up or defensive drills to warm up. And took care of all the video as well to prepare for the other teams. And obviously, he's French. I'm American. So we had with three American players at the time. So I took kind of took care of the American players, the translating, as well, many things like that. So.
Did you like it?
Yeah, no, I loved it. We had the team later too, they've always kind of been a lower budget team. So we had one of the lowest budgets. It was the second division at the time in Pro B. And first year we made the playoffs. Second year we finished second, basically having the least amount of money. So, we had a great time winning makes it fun. So.
And then how'd you get your first head coaching job?
Well, my buddy Laurent got moved up he got a job in the first division in Dijon. So he left and, basically they just promoted me to the head job. So I took over, the team after being 2 years as the assistant. So.
Were any of the guys on the team still guys that you played with?
No, they had all left. A couple of younger French players had grown up playing on the youth teams and stuff. So I had either thrown them elbows during practice or had watched them play and kind of, you know, grew up with them. But
okay, so you're the head coach and you get your own team. Okay. Mm-hmm. How much involvement did you have in terms of player selection?
Pretty much all of it. So the GM at the time actually was my buddy's dad. And we had maybe one or two or three French guys who still had contracts, so they stayed. But the way we worked is basically I did the recruiting or the selection of the players. And then the GM at the time, he basically verified he had been there 30 years. And he was the boss of everything. And he would verify the players. And then I kind of had a price, gave him a price. And then he did the final negotiation with the agents always.
Who are your first Americans?
I had Maurice Acker. And I had Rob Shooter Foreman. Maurice Acker, a little point guard from Marquette. Chris Dove, he went to Bellarmine, but he's had a great career in Europe now as well. And we had a great team. First year, we basically had the lowest budget in France in the second division, and we won it the first year. So as far as starting my coaching career, couldn't have started in a better way.
So then you go to first division next year, right?
Exactly.
How do you function in the first division when you had the lowest budget in the second division?
Well, we had the lowest budget again in the first division.
And how'd you do?
We ended up, well, we started great. We were at the top first half of the year. We're probably in the top 8 or 9. We were doing incredibly well again. And I took a lot of guys who had come from the second division. I wanted guys who were hungry because we had no money. So I wanted guys basically sold it. You come play for me, first division. You may not make a lot of money, but you get your foot in the door. And if you have a great year, you get paid later.
Show yourself, you get a better contract somewhere else next year.
Exactly. So I sold it like that. So we ended up doing really well in the beginning. And then halfway through the year, I basically signed, or a rumor came out that I was going to leave. And we kind of didn't do so well after that. The whole goal was to stay in the first division, which halfway through the year, we almost had it locked up. And then I ended up basically leaving. No, I didn't leave, but the rumor got out that I was leaving.
So how did rumor come out? So you did interview with somebody?
Yeah. I interviewed with someone, and it was probably 2/3 of the way through, and somewhere around there. And I don't know how I got it. Agents, where are the agents leak everything? Agents leaked it to the press. And then so it got out in the press that I was going to leave, basically. I denied it, of course, but it was out there that I was going to leave. And then so we struggled a little bit after. But and then the last game of the year, I verified that I was going to leave.
So where'd you go?
Limoges.
Okay, so before we get to Limoges, so what do you like as a head coach, right? Like at this point in time, like what are you running as far as your system? Are you practicing like an American coach? Are you practicing like a French coach? Like what are you like?
I'd say I had a mix between the American style and the French style, because I wouldn't say we practice super long, like maybe some European coaches will do. But so I kept the practice hard, a little short, but very hard. But we had the 2-a-days and as well. So I kind of mixed the two cultures together again. And so when we had at least amount of money, I tried to get a team selected with kind of the classic modern day type thing with a lot of 3-point shots. I knew we weren't going to be as big as fit and physical as some of the other teams. So, especially that first year in the first division, we had a team that shot a lot of threes. And my whole goal was to get hot. You had to win basically 12 games to stay in the first division. So I was trying to build a team where in my mind, I was like, we can get hot 12 to 13 games of the year and win. Basically, that's enough to stay in the first division. And
how many
first couple of years, we had one of the best defenses always. So, and we led the league in rebounding too, which I always try to sell it. That's two things you can teach and almost anyone can do. So we focus on defense and basically shooting threes and survive. So.
How many did you win when you tried to win 12 or 13? How many did you end up winning?
Like 14, I think, or something. But we had won like 9 early as we were doing like really well. And then it was like, we went on a losing streak, and it was a long, and then you go on a losing streak in Europe, it's not a couple week thing. It can turn into like a couple months. So we play once a week, it gets long. Playing once a week with some breaks in between, losing streaks can get long. So.
Did you coach in English or in French?
Franglais, mixed.
Franglais.
A little bold.
Like if you call two, do you talk? Or do you go two, run two? Like what do you do?
It depends who's bringing the ball up.
Do you think in French, or were you thinking in English?
No, I still think in English. Pretty much always think in English, but I flip flop between who I was talking to. I speak basically fluent French. I got a big accent, but so depending on who I was talking to, speaking French, speaking English, and mixing and matching. And same in the French league now, you can have up to 5 to 6 foreign players in the first division. So depending on the group, it's basically half and half. So you got to kind of mix it. So.
Do you like that? Do you like the influx of more foreign talent?
Well, it depends what side you're on. Because, I mean, the French league, there's a lot of good young French players. And so, a lot of teams will bring some imports in, and maybe the French guys are just as good or deserve it, but they need a chance. Their confidence, French players, some of them missing maybe is a little bit of confidence and that American killer instinct. But they have just as much physical talent and almost talent, but it's just that mental side of it that they're missing. So maybe with the playing time, a little bit extra playing time and a little bit more responsibility, they could maybe hit that next level, basically. But you know, of course, if you're to the open borders and, you know, so like the team I had in Limoges, I only took 1 year, I took four foreigners. I had like six or seven French. I didn't take the full quota. I went to the young French guy style too. So.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
What is it like to cut a guy?
Oh, it's hard. Because I still, you know, some coaches probably don't care. But I had been cut myself. And I had been treated, you know, good, obviously, throughout my career. But I had been treated like a piece of crap, too. Man, I never obviously enjoyed being treated like a piece of crap. But it's still a business. So when you do have to cut a player, it's obviously not easy. And there were some coaches who put the guy on a track at 6 o'clock in the morning and force him out and run him out. And I can't do that. And I could never do that. And so, you know, maybe sometimes people say maybe I'd be too nice, but no, it's hard. So
Limoges, how'd you do in Limoges?
The first year, very good. Limoges historically is one of the best French teams. They won the most titles, I think, throughout history, or second most or something. And they hadn't been in the playoffs in a few years. But anyways, first year, we finished third, made the semifinals, played the Euro Cup, finished in the top 16. So we had a great year. And had a lot of good young French players who had some responsibility the year before, because obviously they were good players, but they even put them more on the map because they were had a lot more responsibility. So,
and then where'd you go next?
The second year I got cut halfway through the year after. So that was my first experience as a coach of getting fired.
And so what do you remember about getting fired?
Oh, it's a lot.
Okay. So at the time, your record was what?
We were maybe 4-7 in the league. Euro Cup, you're like 2-3 or 2-4. So not bad. It was a relationship type problem that started everything, basically. So we had a player, Smarto Samuels, went to Louis.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I had him the year before, and he's a great player, and he's a good guy, great player. Yeah, but you know, he played in the NBA, and then he kind of was good in Europe, and started having some problems. Anyway, my first year, we took him towards the end of the year, and he really helped us and had a great year. But I didn't want him back the second year. But the GM and some of the fans who kind of controlled the team there wanted him back. Anyways, I said no all summer. Eventually, the GM imposed him on me, and I had taken two French centers. So that didn't go too well with the two French centers who were good players, played national team, or great, great players. So kind of made the balance of the team off. And Samardo knew basically that even though I had no problems with him, he knew that I didn't want him. Anyways, so one point I was in the game, I was yelling at Samardo to defend, and he told me basically to fuck off. He told me to fuck off. I said, fuck me. I was like, you know, basically fuck you, go sit out and you're not going to play again. And that was my time. And I knew at the time it was a little, because Limoges has gone through maybe 17, 18 coaches in 20 years or something. So basically every 6 months to a year, the coach gets fired. So it's a crazy place. And so basically I knew my time, it was either going to be me or Samardo was going to have to leave. So I took that as my opportunity to try to get him gone. And anyway, so he was going to get, the GM said, okay, we'll get rid of him. Basically, we won 2 games without him. We lost 2 games without him. And the GM was like, we need Samardo back. And he came back, and that was the end for me because the whole situation. We lost maybe 1 or 2 games more, and then the GM pulled me aside. Well, he didn't pull me aside. We lost the game at home. He pulled me outside the VIP thing. And it was raining outside and basically told me we're going to make a change under the rain after a game. So that was not the best experience.
So your family, your kids are like middle school age at this point in time, right? Mm-hmm. Were they in Limoges or were they still back in Toulon?
No, they were in Limoges. The first year they didn't come because I told them Limoges is a crazy place. Obviously, every 6 months to a year, you get fired. Had a great year. Next year, they come up. My wife got there probably in November, middle of November. I got fired end of December or January or something like that. So she was there about a month.
Did you immediately get another job or did you sit out the rest of the year?
No, that year I sat out the rest of the year. And
what'd you do?
Well, I stayed in Limoges, took care of my kids basically because they were playing for Limoges, the youth teams and stuff.
That had to be weird, right?
Oh, that was very weird because I'd go to the youth teams there, the college age kids. My son was still in high school, the oldest one, the youth playing the college age kids. So they played before the pro players. So I'd go to my son's games basically before the pro game, and I'd sneak out before the pro game started. But it was a little weird. In Limoges, you walk down the street. It's a basketball town. So you know, you get gas, you go to the bakery, you do whatever, and everyone can recognize you. And it's basically the only thing to do there. And so it was hard to stay there. But
yeah, and plus you're not exactly inconspicuous. I grew a beard, put on some glasses. Nobody would ever know, right? It just looked like some little dude. It's not exactly easy to hide. Okay, so then where next?
So I sat out that year. And then in the springtime of that year, actually, I had a job, another good French job that the president said yes, the GM said yes, the contract was sent. I signed a pre-contract. And anyways, basically a few days before I was supposed to sign the real contract, but I was recruiting players. I was talking to the GM every day, messages. Da-da. Anyways, they reneged on it. The GM reneged on it for some reason. I still don't know. But anyways, so I got totally screwed on that one. And that one went, and then eventually I ended up in Japan.
Okay. So, but didn't you, was it Limoges? When did you had one of the kids that was drafted, right?
Yeah. Sekou Doumbouya.
He's now with Lakers 2A though, I think. Right. By the way, playing for Miles Simon.
Yeah.
There's your world coming full circle.
Yeah.
So what was that like for you? You're coaching a kid who, like, you're told is going to be an NBA draft pick. Mm-hmm. You've seen it all, done it all. What did you what did you think of him in terms of that part of his development and what he could be?
Sekou, coming into Limoges when he was younger, people were talking about when he was 16, 17, talking about him being, you know, the number one pick, number two pick, one of the best players ever come out of Europe. And so he came to Limoges with that type of hype where he's supposed to be basically a top five pick. And so he came to Limoges. So it was a good opportunity for me, obviously, to coach him and to have him there. Physically and athletically, that's why he had the hype. I mean, he's an incredibly physically gifted athlete. Yeah, he just can do things that I've never seen before, especially for his age. He was 18, whatever. And so he ended up getting drafted, I think, 15th or 13th by Detroit. After. So there was a lot of pressure on me, too, because obviously with his agents, you know, you play him, and he was young, and we had a good team. So the whole goal is obviously to win. But then you had this pressure on the team, too, with the buyouts, the NBA buyouts, is big money. So, you know, you one game, you play 10 minutes. We win the game by 20, and all of a sudden, 30 minutes later, I get a phone call from his agent or the GM. Hey, he's got to play a little bit more. There's a lot of stuff riding on this. You know, it's like, yeah, but we won the game by 20. Who's got to play? So it was a different management thing, too, as far as managing the other good players we had, as well as trying to get in minutes and growing them as a player, too. So.
During this time, Kane's getting recruited, right? So what'd you tell him? Like, how'd you help him? Like, you got to let him make their own decision. And you were very much an independent thinker. You're still an independent thinker. And I know the input from a dad, France and American, very, very different. What was your input like with him?
But Kane, the two sons, Kane is probably a little bit more French than my youngest one. So I think Kane, and of course he fell in love for the first time in Limoges that year. So, and I think him probably in the beginning of, I kind of pushed him to go to the States because I wanted him to continue his education. Because in France, in Europe, basically once you're done with the high school stuff, if you continue playing, you basically stop school and you concentrate on basketball. So I really wanted him to continue his education. For him, with his girlfriend, he was playing really well. the Limoges team was going to offer him a pro contract and to, you know, practice the pros, play with the pros, kind of like a long-term thing. So, and I think if I would have left it totally up to him, he probably would have stayed in France because he wasn't an American dreaming. And so I pushed him a little bit. And then once Craig Neal was in Monaco at the time, coaching the young kids in Monaco, and that's how he saw Kane and got him to Nevada that first year. So for my youngest son, he's American dreaming. He's all in on Jacob's, you know, the more of the American side. Than
my and how good is Jacob in comparison to Kane?
Jacob can play. He's at Miramar Community College. So like he suffered through the coronavirus a little bit because he basically didn't play a game for a year and a half. And, you know, so that I basically had no tapes on him, but I'm sure he'll be hopefully in Division I someday and playing. He's taller. He's about 6'7", almost 6'8". But like this year, the junior college coach, he's, yeah, I'm going to play him 1 through 5. He can play big guy, but he can play guard. He can do a lot of things.
Is the ultimate goal for both of them to play back in France?
Yeah, if they're for sure. I think so. So I still kind of been everywhere, but I still push the education thing. So Jacob, for example, he's talked about being a doctor. So if you can be a doctor, maybe a little bit better than playing overseas, but so we'll see. I'll let them choose whatever, obviously, after that. So.
What do you like as a parent? Like last year, you know, Kane's at Nevada. Like when you watch the games, how do you handle in terms of your desire for your son to play, but then you're also a coach, right? So you have that kind of perspective of it.
Yeah. Well, it was I was up a lot of times at 5 a.m. Watching games, or that's for sure. And I can say, and it was too bad with the coronavirus that I couldn't be there in person. I wish I could be there more. But watching him play, knowing what he can do, and in Nevada was a little frustrating because he always played with a break on. But because he grew up in Europe making the extra pass, playing team ball, and Nevada was basically, if you got the ball, you better shoot it. And so he played, he had fun, but it's always stressful watching your son play or whatever. So,
okay. So when did you get to Japan?
Last year, made it to Yokohama.
So what were you doing during when COVID, when everything was shut down?
2 years ago then? Or a year and a half ago?
Yeah.
Last year or 2 years ago?
2 years ago. So what were you doing? We'll retract. So what were you doing?
When COVID first hit, I was home in France. So there I was doing nothing.
So that was the Limoges year?
No, that was after. So I went 1 year basically with no job.
So you did nothing for a year? And that was the year that they had COVID?
Yeah.
Oh, so you didn't miss anything?
No, basically not.
What'd you do with your time? Just your son?
A lot of walks, a lot of in France for those three or four months. While you're supposed to be locked up in the house, you couldn't even you could go to the grocery store, and that's about it. So it was long. So I got pulled over by the cops for walking my dog outside. It's like, well, what are you doing outside? It's French, but what are you doing outside? I'm walking the dog. Dog got to take a shit. He's like, you got a house or apartment? I was like, a house. He's like, a dog can go to the bathroom and take a shit in the house. I was like, come on, man. So yeah, I got a ticket. I got a 135 euro ticket. I was probably 400 meters outside my house.
You got a 135 euro ticket for taking your dog to take a dump close to your house.
Yeah. So it was long.
Now in France, like in America, most people pick up after their dogs. In France, do you always have to bring the bag? Because I'm sure Japan, it's everything's clean. What's the French culture like?
Most people will clean up after their dogs in the cities on the city streets, but we live kind of
in the countryside.
Yeah, we're on I walk my dog through wine fields, whatever. So he fertilizes the.
Right, so if I have a bottle of Chardonnay, I can sit there and go like, that was really good. It's probably Kyle Milling's dog.
A little Labrador mix in there.
Little Labrador. Okay, so you get to Japan. What's it like coaching in Japan?
I love it. Because, well, there's always stress to win, but there's probably a little bit less stress. But the players, there's a lot less egos. There's a lot less attitudes to manage. And as far as telling them what to do and getting them to do it, it's a lot easier. And the respectful, I mean, in France, here in Japan, you can lose a game. And I've had many times, you know, the players come up and, you know, say, you know, sorry, coach, sorry.
Yeah, they apologize.
My fault. You know, I'm like, no, it's okay. It's not your fault. You know, it's the team's fault. No, it's my fault. You know, like, no, you know, we're in Europe. You know, it's, you lose a game, it's coach's fault. You know,
so. Yes. Now, what is your view on American style versus the foreign style in terms of, like, my perspective has always been since when I started traveling, playing overseas, whatever. And then anytime I coach there, it's like, they respect the athleticism of the American player, but they don't actually respect the way those guys play. Is that a fair, like watching the Olympics, you know, and we can say, hey, they didn't send LeBron and whatever, but there's still plenty of good players, but those games were really competitive. And that kind of feeds into that, hey, our style is actually better basketball.
Yeah, no, but it's that's what basically, I mean, if you watch it, I mean, that's, you know, I probably agree. You watch, you know, the Spain team, the French team, Czech team, whatever, play, and you watch America, as far as quality of basketball, it's night and day. But the Americans, obviously, they have more athleticism and more talent. But the game is completely different. So, you know, you put some of those European players in the NBA game, it would probably be a whole different show too, whatever, you know. So yeah, I always think the international, they put the top American EuroLeague players and put them with a USA jersey on in the Olympics, they probably win by 30 or whatever. You know?
I agree. You find the best guys that have played in Europe that understand the FIBA game.
And the physicality of it. And what I always find interesting now is 20 years ago, it was, the Europeans are soft. You know, when they come to the NBA or, you know, European basketball is soft. And now people are basically saying, you watch the USA team play, say, oh, yeah, NBA players are soft. You know,
like, yes.
You know, the Europeans are beating them up. You know, it was like, that was a big, big, big change.
You, anytime I've seen a picture of you or a video of you, you always go black suit, white shirt, black tie, right? Are you a Mad Men guy? Like, where does that come from?
That's not like black tie, but it's I'm classic. You know, dark suit, white shirt. And this year we have a team tie we got to wear, but I'll throw like a red tie or a blue tie. Yeah.
Now, how are you on officials?
Here in Japan, easy. France, I was a little harder. I'd yell, but I always make up a joke after. So I wasn't a big T guy, but I'd ride them and then, you know, could throw some humor in there. So
French humor?
Help. Huh?
French humor?
Yeah, French humor or English humor.
Is French humor different than American humor? Like, we're very sarcastic. Sure, like, in basketball, you're very sarcastic. You guys talk a lot of shit, right? But you got to be careful on, you know, who you're, like, what's French humor like?
I'm kind of sarcastic, but French humor overall is a lot different. We go, you know, watch a movie with my wife in French. Well, one, I don't like to do it. But you should be dying laughing. She'll be dying laughing. I'll be watching. I mean, wait, this is not funny. But anyways, it was. it's different. So I ride them, but then make jokes. We're here in Japan. There's such a respect thing that that's what my wife or my mom, she watches, you know, some games online. And in France, my shirt would be drenched. I'd be red. My mom always thought I was about to have a heart attack or something. And she watches a game in Japan and I'm sitting, my face is, you know, not red. I'm not sweating. I'm not screaming and yelling. But there's a whole thing too where, like, that just doesn't work here either. You know, so some foreign coaches who come here and they, you know, they keep that European mentality, they basically don't last because there's such a respect. You respect their refs. There's no shit talking. The players don't talk shit here. That's looked down upon. You know, the player falls down, the other player will pick them up. And, you know, so American players are talking shit, that doesn't work here either. So it's a whole respect thing, respecting your opponent, respecting your adversary, respecting their rest, respecting the people who run the tables, the score clocks.
How's the sushi?
Oh, it's incredible. So, okay, sushi, it's more sashimi because it's like everything. Like my favorite sushi spot in San Diego. You know, they got all these different kinds of rolls, all these twists, wraps, all these different kinds of wraps and stuff.
Yeah.
So I showed the Japanese guys a picture of the sushi. I said, this is my favorite spot there. Like, what is that? You know, It's like, why sushi? That's not sushi.
So it's all sashimi?
Pretty much sashimi. You know, they got a few rolls and stuff, but they're not big on rolls. They're just basically straight different slices of the tuna, different slices of the salmon, different slices of, you know, basically sashimi. But all the other food here is incredible.
Okay, so when they so the food's incredible. What else is incredible in Japan, food wise?
Food wise,
yeah.
All their, but the meat period, like chicken, the different kinds of fish, the soups, the salads. I mean, last year I lost about 10 or 15 pounds, gained it back when I got back to the States and France. This year I'm down about 10 already. So,
okay, so when they bring it, is there anything? Like here, you know, you have the ginger and you have the wasabi and you got the little thing. And we think like, that's how you eat in Japan. How do you eat in Japan? Sushi restaurant, how do you eat in Japan?
Oh, pretty close to the same. You got the wasabi and the soy sauce and the little dips and stuff. But everything's so small here, like place in the hotels, you know, we can eat, you know, little tiny side dish of tofu, so tiny, everything's smaller. So you don't have these big, servings or, you know, anything. So it's also delicate and nice little dishes, these little pretty dishes. You know,
have you picked up the language at all?
So I started taking lessons about it. Last year I didn't pick up too much because I didn't know if I'd stay much. I actually had a job in France and I thought I was going to go and then I ended up not going. So, but this year I started taking lessons. So I try to learn a word every new phrase or word every few days and try to say it in practice for the guys. And create a little humor again or some jokes with the guys or whatever. So it's but it's hard.
But it sounds like you're enjoying yourself. Like it's different. Yeah.
No, I totally enjoy it here. Hopefully my wife will be here soon because last year she couldn't get in because of Corona. This year, so as of right now, my wife's in France. Our boys are in America and not in Japan and all over. But she should be here in about 2 to 3 weeks. The visa's gone through. So she should be coming soon. So,
Okay. How about this? If there's one place in France that an American should go, okay, everybody knows the basic spots. But from a guy who's been an American, that's become like a naturalized French citizen, where should I go?
Well, I like the Southwest region a lot. Perigord, Sarlat, south of Nierpo area, a little bit north. Because you got the old French countryside, those city streets, but the weather's nice. The food is probably the best, I would say, in France.
What time of year?
I'd go spring or fall. Summertime, too many, well, maybe not now, too many tourists, but too many tourists, and it's hot. But and there's not a lot of air conditioning in a lot of places. So if you have
and no ice in the drink. All that stuff and
spring and fall, like most places, you know, June or September to me are the best months in France. Even if you go to this French Riviera, if you go there in the September or June, the weather's beautiful. There's no tourists or less tourists. There's old, you know, elderly or retired people out, but those are the best times of year. So
can you imagine if you told your 16 or 17 year old self, like when we're in Vegas and it's me, you and Matt Purdy and you're feeding me my first beer. Right. Can you imagine if you pulled yourself aside and said, hey, this is what the next 30 years of your life are going to look like. You're going to go to Santa Barbara. Okay. And live on the fucking beach, but then not be happy. Transfer, go up to Oregon, like it. Okay. Then go to Belgium and then go to France and then go to Lebanon and then get back to France and get married and have kids. And play in one place for a while and then then come back to the States and be a teacher and then go back to France and be an assistant coach and head coach and then go to Japan and be a coach. Mm-hmm. Like, it's an amazing ride, right?
Yeah, no, it's pretty crazy. I actually, in high school, I used to tell one of my friends, I'm going to marry a woman with an accent. I don't know why, he's just saying, but I always wanted to marry a woman with an accent. So I did. And I've been packing my bags for basically over 20 years now. And I remember telling one of my uncles a few months ago, I've been doing it for 20 years. And somebody was, oh, you're not going to settle down sometime. I don't think so. I love moving around and I have a feeling my bags will still be, ready to go pretty much for the next however many years.
Is there anywhere you like? Do you want to do Australia? Do you want to do Spain? Do you want to do Italy? Like, what else? What's on the places I want to go and coach?
I think I would like to stay in Asia somewhere, maybe in a different country in Asia. And I also would like, hopefully someday, to get to like Saudi Arabia or the Qatar or
the big money in the player.
Different style of basketball.
Do you want to coach your boys?
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, I've done it before when they're little.
Which one would you like to coach? If you can only pick one, which one do you want to coach?
Probably the oldest one, because the youngest one, Kane. He has too much attitude. Every time I tell him to do something, he always has a response. So Kane, maybe listen to me a little bit more, or Jacob, he would, he's already told me to F off a few times. I've tried to tell him stuff, so he may do it again. So.
What separates you as a coach?
What separates me? I don't know. I try to manage my teams like I would manage maybe like if I ran a restaurant or any type of business where you got all different jobs and roles. But I think all the successful businesses, you try to treat all your employees in the same manner. So I think I have a lot of compassion. I think I do for all my players. And I try to, you know, treat the tenth guy on the team, that role, just as important as the first guy. So I'm not a big guy of favorites. And I think the players like to play for me, and they give me their best. And because I think I care about them, and I show the compassion and care for them. And I think that helps to get them to give back, basically.
But you're also coaching grown men. So do you have coffee with them? Do you go to dinner with them? Or is it when you show up at the gym, you know, we're here, and then otherwise, you know, how do you handle the relationship aspect of it?
I think as I've gotten more experience, I've gotten a lot. In the beginning, it was like player coach, you know, that's kind of the old school thing. But as I've gotten a little bit more experience, I'll go out to, you know, I'll eat with some of the players, or, you know, try to get to know them more and more, their off the court stuff, their families, their people. And, basically, you know, on the court's business, off the court's a friend, if not son, almost type of relationship where we talk about whatever and anything, and treat them like a man and a person. And just like, I hope they look at me in the same ways.
Okay. Are you still a Charger fan? Most people from San Diego hate the Chargers because the Chargers left. Are you still a Charger fan?
A lot less, that's for sure. But yeah, it's probably like a little bit. When they're losing, you're like, when they lose, it's like, oh yeah, they're losing. And now when they win, it's like that old,
No, you're the Chargers. That's my team. I love it. Yeah, he's an Oregon guy.
When they lose, I'm like, screw them, they left.
But they got Justin Herbert as an Oregon guy at quarterback. There's no way you can't be a fan.
I don't know. I think they looks like they got it going again now. I think with a good coaching staff and we all love him. I wish they would have had that in San Diego and built a new stadium there, but maybe someday they'll get a team back.
Is home France or is home San Diego?
It's hard to say. Home, still San Diego.
Okay, how about this? When France was playing Team USA this summer, inside your soul, who are you cheering for?
USA.
You sure?
Yeah. Well, I got a lot of friends, the French friends, USA team. Talking shit, so it's more the type of thing where, like, yeah, we still got the most. We're still the number one team, basically. So no, I still cheered for USA. So
best player you ever played against?
That's hard going back right now.
Okay, I'll share with you a story here, real quick. Okay, so
Sharif in college, maybe we won
Sharif Abdul Rahim.
Yeah, in college he was just a beast. Or
I just remember, here's what I remember. So I played in the Magic's round ball. Chauncey Billups got hurt. So I was like a replacement for him. So we practiced all week, and Kevin Garnett shows up the day of the game. And like Sharif, Vince Carter, you know, Stephon Marbury, like all these guys are fucking ballers. This is high school. Mm-hmm. They're all ballers. They're all really good. Robert Traylor, rest in peace. And KG shows up the day of the game. And like, as good as everybody is, he was better. You know, it was like, it wasn't fucking close. He was just so big and so long and so athletic. You know, he wasn't really that skilled at that point in time, but just an absolute freak. And, you know, I can think of, you know, in college, like, you know, when you played against a guy like Ray Allen, I was in my first, my year in the Big East, had four teams in the top 10, and Iverson was in the league. And, but Ray Allen was better than everybody else. Like just better. Is there any, can, yeah, obviously Sharif would be that guy with anybody
else? To me, Sharif, I just remember he's one of like, I used to be a decent defensive player. I mean, I remember playing at least once or twice and I couldn't stop him. Right? I mean, he was just in fadeaways and moves smooth, doing everything when he's at Cal there. And as far as one player who I knew I couldn't stop him was maybe him, one-on-one type stuff.
Your favorite arena, for gym arena in France?
In France? Well,
what's it like?
It's one of the nicer arenas, so it's big. It's more American type style. That's what's the guy's name? Stu, an American group bought it. Rick Pitino's in the group with Mashburn. But it's an American type style where it's really big and super nice. And you know, the crowd's okay. But there, as far as just the arena and everything, it's as far as crowd, Limoges is probably the number one. Limoges crowd is sick. Or it's couldn't hear yourself think or talk most of the time.
Does anything compare to Mac Court?
Mac probably number one, but I would say Limoges when he was going could rival with it because Limoges has a roof that flat, you know, the top level you can't see concaves, so the sound just like. So you could hear him cheering, but you could also hear him booing because they move a lot too.
That was at the end.
They boo all the time. You start a game, you another team score 8-0 run to start the game. All of a sudden, you start booing. But that's just the way they are. That's why it's so cutthroat there. But
awesome stuff. This was amazing. This was really cool. Plus, your boys get a chance to see it and watch it some.
Yeah.
And. I want to watch your team play a little bit and then maybe do this a little bit more later on in the year. Is that cool?
Yeah, no problem. Yeah. We're starting off pretty good so far. This year we're 7-2. So hopefully we can keep it going. So.
How different is the, like the one good thing about France is like, you know, all the teams and all the styles and all the systems. Mm-hmm. Is it catching up on that when you switch countries? How hard is that?
Well, the first year was very hard because I tried in the beginning last year to bring a lot of the European game here, the pick and roll, basically no post up. Yeah, we're here at the game. It's not all post up, but the merit that you have import players, they're basically all big guys. So they need the ball. And usually you have a couple of true centers where pick and roll, they're not very good at, but you know, you put them back to the basket. So I basically flip flopped everything, you know, defensively too. You have, you know, Japanese players are fast, but they're not as big and long as physical. So like, you can't switch basically at all. And you can't double team.
You hedge ball screens?
I hedge ball screens. A lot of people put ice because they have these, you know, big import players, but I like hedge. So we try this year. I can't hard hedge. I got one guy who's Greg Eshaniki went to Creighton.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, he has a little bit of a hard time hedging, but he has good feet. Anyway, he's getting better and better at it. But so I hedge most ball screens and, you know, switch if it's really late. So anyway, so the style of play is different. So this year has helped me because, you know, after 1 year of doing it in Japan, I kind of know the style a little bit more. So
it's awesome. Hey, man, thank you for doing it. Thank you for turning me on to beer at a very young age.
Right? Only the good things for you, Doug.
Your secrets are out. Now I got a place in France to go and visit. I'm going to come and stay with you. Apparently now nobody's staying there except for your wife. When she leaves, I'm going to go and stay at your place and crash.
Exactly. Open house, man.
Open house. Thanks for joining me. I appreciate it, man.
Appreciate it. Nice seeing you. Yeah.
You're the best.
Wow, that was a lot. And, you know, it's one of those things where I hope you have as much fun in listening as I do in having these talks. Look, there's a lot of basketball stuff to get to. College basketball teams starting to play their exhibition games, first games of the season. start on Tuesday. That's the 9th of November. We'll have all those games. And of course, I'll do an emergency pod. I think I got to do an NBA pod, maybe record it this weekend. It'll drop before those games next week, just so we can talk about the mess that is the Lakers and how fixable their issues are. My man Colin Cowherd made the statement that the East is better than the West. We'll discuss that as well. We got a lot of NBA stuff to get to, and then, of course, college basketball kicking off. But I do hope you'll tell friends about it. Tweet this to a buddy. Send it to a friend. DM it to him. Show it to him on Facebook, because this is the fiber of what sports is about, the beginning of relationships and sports. You can build an entire life around it, even if you don't become an NBA player. My thanks to Kyle Milling for all his time. Reminder to listen to the Doug Gottlieb Show daily, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific, the iHeartRadio app, Fox Sports Radio, or foxsportsradio.com. If you want to stream it at your house, you can do so. If you don't want to do the app. And then, of course, you can download that podcast wherever you download podcasts. Just type in Doug Gottlieb Show. Thank you so much for listening. A reminder to write a review, download, subscribe, and rate us. I think that helps us. Tell a friend about it. And if you have a suggestion, if you have a question, at Gottlieb Show, you can find me on IG. You can find me on Twitter as well. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is All Ball.